The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, Show 121, Thursday, September 6, 2007. Centre Show with Orb Networks. I'm Ian Dixon, and after the 1 week break, I'm back with another show. And this week it's Mark McCall from automatedhome.com, and we're going to be talking about home automation, the kind of equipment you can control with automation, and some of the intelligence you can build into a home automation solution using the power of a PC and Windows Media Center. As ever, I've got email and news items, and I'm going to catch up with the email. So first to an email from Errol. It says, "Hi Ian, enjoy your show. A few weeks back, you were talking about Media Center Extends and Pika porting kits with a Microsoft rep. Is this the new HP Smart Media TV that showed up at Best Buy and the same kit talked about on the show, or is this Vive and the Media Center TV or a combo? And also, does Media Center Communicate and the iBeam work with this TV? And have you tried the iBeam? I want one, I think. Thanks if you have a chance to reply." From Errol. Thanks for the email. I think the Smart Media TV is HP's own concept of an extender and isn't a Media Center extender that was talked about on the show with Todd Bora, and it's worth listening to that one if you wanted to know more about extenders. V2 extenders, or version 2 extenders, are definitely coming, and it's just a matter of time now when we get to see them, and hopefully we should start to see some details emerge of the features they have and what they support. As for Media Center Communicator and the iBeam, I haven't tried that yet. I'm hoping to get hold of one soon. In fact, I did promise a giveaway of one of those a while ago. This is for the remote control solution for Media Center that's voice controlled, and I did promise I'll be giving away one soon, and we'll try and get that back on track for a future show, so keep listening out for that one. So thanks for your email. Now an email from Dave Dugan. He said, "Hi Ian, how's it going? I found your podcast yesterday and I've listened to 63 episodes. I'm just kidding. I've listened to about 10 though. It's very interesting, and I appreciate if you put into it. I've been a Mac user since Windows came out with ME, but Vista looks amazing, so I'm saving to build up a new Windows computer and hop back on the train. I'm an electrician, but I just got a job at Home Theatre Audio Video Custom Installs Company in Santa Barbara, and I've been researching different home automation products, and Lifeware has blown my mind. I've heard they have a Mac version. Have you heard anything about it? Sorry if the question sounds a little JV, but I've heard you talk about cable cars like they're a big deal. What's so special about them? And isn't there software which you could run into Windows to record HDTV to a server? Why should I pay the cable company for a system that tries to reinvent Media Center when Windows already provides me one with much more? Finally, have you heard any complaints about the audio quality in Wi-Fi stereo systems compared to audio systems?" Well, thanks for the email. It's great to see that you're getting into Media Center from previously a Mac user. And if you've not used Windows since ME, I guess you'll see a lot of changes. As a Lifeware, I've got a full show coming up with Lifeware in about 3 weeks' time. And we're going to be talking about exactly what Lifeware is and the home automation options and the whole house audio and all that kind of thing. So listen out for that one. I'm not sure whether it's a Mac client, but check out the show for that one. And we'll have some links on the show notes for that one as well, so you can find out some more. I know they have a web browser client, so maybe that would work on a Mac. The deal with cable card, my take on it is that the cable card is the only way that you can record HDTV that comes over cable in the Media Center PC, and the cable card is kind of your connection and security back to the cable company so that Media Center can record HDTV. So without the cable card, you've not got that connection and the unencryption of the encrypted cable signal. So you need the cable card so you can watch HDTV on Media Center and then record it. So that's the issue with that one. So the biggie with that one is that with cable card, you get all that great content and directly into Media Center, and you don't need a sort of a conversion box to get it into an analog signal and back into digital, so it makes for a better quality. As for audio quality, there should be no reason why you have worse quality over Wi-Fi or cable, because apart from the fact that cable is more reliable, if you're sending data down a cable or over Wi-Fi, you know, once it gets reassembled at the other end, it will just be the great quality that it was when it was sent. I guess with cable, you can have more data going down the line than you can with Wi-Fi. But for audio, I've had no problems streaming with wireless before, so there should be actually no audible difference as long as you use the same settings for your cable system as you would do with Wi-Fi. So I hope that answers some of the questions. Please get back in touch if you have some more, and if anybody wants to correct me on the cable card issue, please let me know. Email address ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. And now an email from Mark. He says, "Hi, and love the show. I have a problem where often when I go to My Music, Vista is very slow at showing album art. While it's doing this, the computer is pretty much frozen. Any ideas on how I can improve this? And it sometimes does it with my video, but not to the same extent. And probably because there are less folders." Next email, Mark, and I queried Mark for the some basic specs of his system to see, you know, whether it was a system issue. And he said it's a 3 GHz Pentium 4 with a gig of RAM with about 4,500 music files in 388 folders. And when running an XP, he didn't have this problem. And I've got about a similar amount, perhaps slightly more, in terms of folders and tracks, and haven't seen this problem at all. So I wonder if any listeners experienced that. What would cause Vista to almost freeze where XP would work fine? Is it to do with the way the album art is stored? Or anybody any clues? Like I said, email address for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. It would be great if we could help Mark out and just point him in the right direction. Now, while I was away, I did manage to get out a video, and that was of the Sony XL301 Media Center PC complete with Blu-ray. As you'll see on the video, I was quite impressed with the Sony Media Center PC. It's a nice looking machine. It's designed like an AV component. And so I'll give you a good tour of that, including the connections and a sneaky look inside. It's a HDMI only machine designed, like I said, for an AV component. I also rented a Blu-ray disc so I could show that off and show that off on the video. So the Sony was nice, fit into my system quite nicely with HDMI and the optical output for the audio. I'll leave it to you to watch the video for my thoughts on Blu-ray, but I'm hoping to get a video review of a HD DVD system soon to sort of balance that out. But let me know what you think, and let me know what you think of the video shows. It's at thedigitallifestyle.com. Now, as I've been away for a couple of weeks and not had a great deal of internet access, there's been quite a lot of news items gone through my RSS reader, so I thought I'd briefly mention a couple. One interesting one was over on the Digital Lifestyle developer blog. Stephen Harding updates us on his progress, including an update to the Yugle application, which I did get to play about with the other week, and really impressed with that. I got it working with the Soapbox, MSN Soapbox, so you can actually watch the Digital Lifestyle video shows through Yugle on Media Center, so it works quite nice actually. And that's taking it from the Soapbox feed rather directly from the site. So I was quite impressed with that, and the links for that in the show notes if you want to have a play with it. Talking about cable card earlier on, S1 Digital are now shipping their cable card Media Center PCs. And again, details for that in the show notes, and we're going to have an interview with S1 Digital in the coming months. Charlie Owen posted happy 5th birthday Windows Media Center. So it's 5 years now since Media Center first launched in its version 1 product, and we've had a few guests on the shows talking about the early days of Media Center. And Charlie links to a post that calls it a real Microsoft success story, and I think I'll agree with that one. Media Center had a fantastic growth, and I think that sort of growth is leveling out now. We're not seeing the same rapid speeding updates from Microsoft, new features certainly, but the stability has come in, and it is a success story. So congratulations to the whole team at Microsoft on that one. There's plenty of announcements on Home Server, with announcements of product launches and details of specs of different Home Server products, and some great price points really. I think I saw one sort of a £350 for the complete unit, thinking for what it does, you know, with the backups, the remote access and centralized storage. And as you've seen on previous shows, we can store centrally to that from Media Center, record directly to it and that kind of thing. I think it's a great solution, and I'm certainly using mine now for all the things I've just mentioned. So there's plenty of news items on that, and there's some good blogs to check out, including the Windows Home Server blog. So have a look for the links in the show notes on that one. And I noticed as I was recording this show today that Windows Home Server OEM kit is available from eBuyer in the UK, £129. So if you want to build your own Windows Home Server, you can start off with that. And while I was away, Microsoft confirmed that there will be a service pack out for Windows Vista and a service pack 3 out for XP. I think Microsoft are playing down expectations for service pack 1 and saying that it's significant is reduced really thanks to the sort of effective use of Windows updates. So I don't think we're going to see any great features. Hopefully there'll be things like drivers, and I'm sure it'll include a roll up of all of the fixes that have gone up to date, including the Media Center fixes. I doubt we'll see any changes to Media Center, but you never know. So keep an eye on the blogs for that one. And the Service Pack 3 one for Windows XP, I'm pretty sure it's just a roll up of all the fixes that have been out to date. In fact, really, some respects, I wonder how many people think now that sort of service packs are all hat now, considering how Windows Update automatically updates your machines. Do we even need service packs? I know people in the past always say, "Oh, wait till Service Pack 1 comes out before I deploy it." But is that really necessary nowadays with the way that Windows Updates works up? Interesting to hear your thoughts on that one. And finally today, I wanted to mention a new application you'll see in the music section of online media, certainly in the UK, called Cool Room. And today, that Cool Room announced a new premium content channel, Media Center. And it's an application that sits, like I said, in the online media on Vista Media Center. And I think an XP version is coming soon as well. And you can have a look at that on there. It's kind of a premium content channel, so you can watch movie trailers and all, but I think there's also purchase options and sort of different content options on there. At first look, it looks like a XP HTML type application, but I do believe they've got a full Media Center Market Language application coming soon. So have a look at that one. There's some pictures in the link on the show notes, and it's great to see some UK development coming for Media Center, and hopefully to see some Media Center Market Language applications from the UK developers. Finally, I want to mention as well that some good conversations going over in the forums on the digitallifestyle.com. We want to try and build up some of the conversations that are going up there. So head over there, have a look. If you've not registered before, register, get posting your thoughts, and it's really a place to hang out for the Media Center Show community. Right, now time for a message from One Voice. And don't forget, you can download a free trial of Media Center Communicator from the digitallifestyle.com downloads, along with other downloads, including things like MCU Backup. I'll be back with Mark McCall.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on One Voice's Media Center Communicator, MC Each Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit, allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. One Voice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Mark, welcome to the Media Center Show.
Ian, thanks for having me.
It's going to be interesting talking to you tonight because we're looking at the sort of the technology side for the digital lifestyle from a different point of view, which is from the home automation point of view. And you know, automatedhome.co.uk is a place where I've been to look for home automation gear, so it's great that you can come on the show tonight.
Thanks, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, before we dive into the stuff on automatedhome.com, how did you get into this, and how long have you been running the site?
Well, to go back through the mists of time, I suppose as a spotty teenager, I was interested in electronics. Getting myself a bit, I had my black and white portable telly connected to my record player speakers as a youth. That's a long time ago. I built a pressure pad, for example, outside my bedroom so I could detect my sisters in the hallway and things like this. So I've always had an interest in gadgets in the home. We were lucky enough to build our own home in the late 90s, in 99. And so a few years before that, we were really starting to research and plan. And that's where the real interest was born from. How to find information on these technologies. And in the late 90s, there really was very little on the web. There was quite a bit in America, but very little in the UK. I found alt.home.automation, the news group, very helpful. But again, finding UK-specific information wasn't easy. There were one or two online retailers then. But really, the products that you could buy were few and far between, and the information on how to use them was even scarcer. So pretty much born out of that, automated home started as a little hobby. It's still a hobby for me. I still have a proper day job, it's been running now for 10 years. We started the site in 1996, and so last year was its 10th anniversary.
I mean, that's an achievement in itself, isn't it? There's not that many sites that have been around that long, and especially on a pretty specialised area like this.
Yes, true. We're probably a small bunch. We have great support from a lot of guys that are on our mailing list, and in the last couple of years we launched forums as well. So there's all a great sense of community. We started meeting one guy, Keith Doxey, who's a very prolific member of the UK home automation mailing list. Actually flew over to meet me, and he ended up coming and staying with us for a week in 99 and helping us to cable our home while we were building. So there's always been a great sense of community. We built up a good membership. We've had meetings in London and a couple of meetings in Hatfield. We took a hotel there and had a get-together in 2003 and 2004. Various stands, guys showing off their home-built hardware, software development. And then since the Smart Home Show started in the NEC, we've met up there the last couple of years.
And so whereabouts are you based?
I'm based near Belfast in Northern Ireland. I'm about 10 miles from Belfast.
I guess it is a fairly small community, certainly from the UK point of view, of people that are involved in this kind of area. I guess it's growing now, but when you started it, it would have been a small community.
Yes, a small band of nerds, probably. Yeah, we were a pretty strange bunch. Maybe we still are strange. But yeah, it's not something that everyone's interested in. It's one of these things, how do you define home automation? Probably in the early days it was quite tight, but now everything's getting quite blurred, and quite often I'm asked the question, is this the year that home automation is going to take off, you know, for the masses? But then you start to look around and see things like media center PCs in homes, and broadband in homes, and IP CCTV, and electric garage doors, and PIR floodlights. And, you know, maybe it is mainstream, and has been mainstream for quite a few years.
I mean, you sort of took there what my next question was going to be, is what is home automation?
Yes, well, that's, as I say, one we get asked often. Some of sometimes the automation part, I feel, is left out. You know, is a remote control light home automation? Well, it's a remote control light. It's maybe not automatic. There's not much automation there. And the best home automation, from my experience, is that which is totally automated. So, for example, one of the favorite things in our home is whenever you walk into a room and it's dark, the PIR detects movement and turns the light on. And that's a very simple thing, but it is automation. It is something that requires no input from the user other than walking by the sensor. So that's something to consider. Their smart home is another phrase that we use quite often, and again, that implies some sort of intelligence and something that should happen automatically. I've taken a few notes. Some of the areas the main areas, probably number one is lighting. I think that's where most people start with home automation. A lot of people, especially in home cinema rooms, want remote dimming, or they want to be able to hit a button on their universal remote that launches a macro that brings down the screen, starts a projector, dims the light. So quite often lighting is where people get in. Within lighting then we have the budget products like X10, which is how I got into home automation. It's still in my home. Is very affordable. It's plug and play. It's a great product. It's a basic product. It doesn't have some of the features like status control and some other features that people want. And it's an old technology, but as a way in, and a cheap way in, and a plug and play way in, there's nothing really to beat it. There are loads of modules available. I mean, you can have a lamp module, an appliance module. You can have an X10 PIR to detect motion. That leads you to the wireless side of things, wireless key fobs. There's even a thing called a Rex10, which is a little X10 module which makes the sound of a barking dog. So you can have someone walks up to your porch, the PIR detects movement, it radios to the Rex10, and this thing starts to bark inside your door, so the prowler thinks there's a big scary dog inside.
So just to go on to talk about that, you were talking about X10 there. This is the kind of the protocol for controlling these devices together. So we're not necessarily talking about anything to do with PCs here at this stage, but it could be just two devices and they've got to talk to each other somehow. And X10 is the method of control of these devices talking to each other.
Absolutely, and you make a good point there, Ian, that you can start with two modules. Quite a lot of the upmarket systems are systems that you can't retrofit, systems that need planned, and systems that need put in a big way. So if you're going to have your house all Cbus, for example, you pretty much have to do that at once. You have to do that as a big install. Whereas X10, you can start off with a transmitter and a receiver. You can have an X10 lamp module, and you can have a bedside mini controller, and you can turn your bedside lamp on and off. From there, you can add more plug-in modules. You can build the system. You can then go onto the wireless side, as I've said. You can get more complicated. There's a little plug-in device which again connects to a computer, but actually is programmed on the computer and then unplugged, so it doesn't rely on the computer being on all the time. That's a CM12. You can create macros in that, unplug it from your computer, plug it in the wall. Then, for example, your partner's coming home, she can press a button on her key fob remote, and that'll turn on the hall lights, the outside lights, open the garage door, whatever. So it's something that you can build on. You can certainly go PC control and have added functionality there, but again, it's one of the great debates in our side, in our mailing list, on the versus the pros and cons of having a PC involved in something. PCs have certainly got a lot more stable, and I think the secret from my experience is the more specialised a PC is, the more stable it is. If you have a PC just for home automation, which runs two or three applications, in my experience, it's very stable, whether it's Windows or Linux or whatever. So these are all things which are open to the user. There's another great system that I'm sure your listeners are aware of, Z-Wave, which is a wireless, quite like X10, but a wireless version.
Z-Wave,
yeah.
You call it when you're in America.
Absolutely, if you're an American. So Z-Wave has proper two-way communication, which means it has status request, which X10 is one of the big things in X10 that it doesn't have. In other words, if I send a command to turn a lamp on, in X10, you don't know whether that command made it to the module, and you don't know whether the lamp was on. With Z-Wave, there is status reply, so it will give you a message, yes, that I have received this message and the module is now on. Z-Wave uses mesh networking as well, so it can pass on the commands from one module to the next, which expands the range. The downside for Z-Wave for the UK certainly is the lack of modules. We have very, very few modules available still, and we've run several stories on automated home in the last few months, even that more are coming. And my contacts often say, you know, not yet, but soon. But we've been hearing that for probably 18 months, 2 years now. I've got to believe that they are just around the corner. Maybe it'll be 2008, but I really think that Z-Wave is a great product, and if we had the modules, it would be very popular.
And so X10 communicates over the power lines, is that right? And the Z-Wave is a radio communicator.
Exactly. X10 uses the main, so it's as simple as unplugging your light, plugging in a little module, unplugging your light into it, plugging the little mini transmitter into your bedside socket, and the signal travels over your mains within the existing house wiring. To confuse it a little, there are RF X10 modules, but that's just a link from, as I mentioned earlier, the key fob remote. That will be an RF link from it onto a module in the wall, which would then relay it along the mains.
Right, see, because I've got a sort of a basic setup here with just a couple of the plugs, and the way that I've got this, I've got the controller that sits with the PC, and then I've got one sort of dimming plug and one on-off plug, and you know, basically from the PC I can turn the lights on and off. But I think what a lot of people in that sort of configuration, like you mentioned earlier, that's not really being very smart, is it? Just using the PC to turn your light on and off. It's the automation side of it that makes it smart.
Absolutely. It's when it gets exciting whenever you start to do the logic. I'm no programmer, but very simple if-then sort of command. So depending on what hardware controller you have, what software you're using, it can be as simple as if there's movement and it's dark, then turn on the light. And that's when it gets really powerful.
And that's the intelligent side of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So in terms of, we'll just talk about X10 for a minute, then we'll go on to the other stuff. But what kind of devices can you get that are X10 compatible? So I mean, I've got a dimmer and an on-off switch, but what other things can you get?
Yeah, well, basic devices, as you mentioned, the dimmer. So you can obviously dim and brighten your lights. The appliance module. So you can plug that into a kettle or a radio or fluorescent lights, need an appliance module, for example. You can then get slightly more professional X10 units called DINREAL units, which mount in your consumer unit. That's actually what we have in our own home, and that's more for someone who's planning to install X10 from scratch. Those modules have things like memory dim, so whenever you dim your light, you turn it off. The next time you turn your light on, it's at the level that it was dimmed to. So they have a few more features. There's the RF side, as I've mentioned. There's IR as well, so you can have X10 IR receiver. So for example, if you've got Pronto or whatever universal remote, and you want to control the lights in your home cinema room, you buy an X10 IR receiver, and all of a sudden you can do anything you want in your macros of your remote control. There really are a huge list of X10 modules.
And so you mentioned macros there. I mean, that's one of the things that I think are really sort of where these things get exciting. So what would you say is a macro in terms of home automation?
Well, it's pretty much the same as a macro in your universal remote, which a lot of your listeners will have. You know, you press one button and your AV amp goes on, it goes to the DVD input, it turns your TV on, it turns it to external 3 or whatever, it starts the movie. And you can do the same thing with home automation, albeit on a bigger scale. For example, in our driveway into our home, we've got two sensors buried under the drive. The reason we have two is that you can tell the direction of travel of a vehicle. So when our alarm is armed, the computer knows that the house is unoccupied. So you can have very complex macros, like if a car is entering the property and it's dark, turn on the light, check if we're away. If we are away, send an email or an SMS to me to let me know the date and time that a vehicle has entered the property. At night time in our home, again, lights are dimmed down to a certain level in the hallways. If you walk into a hallway, it'll detect you. It'll ramp up the lights, not completely, but a little bit brighter. It'll start a timer. That timer will count down. Every time you break the timer will reset back up again. So eventually you can wander off to bed knowing that the lights are going to dim back down behind you, and you don't need to do anything.
And that is where the intelligence of this comes in. It's kind of perhaps, you know, where the visions of home automation, you know, come from before, you know, from years ago, where you walk into a room, the lights come on, and the door opens, and the music's right, and then you leave the room, and everything gets sort of set back again. So I guess this is what you're talking about, this where these things are not just on-off switches for remote controlling from your PC, but it's actually the intelligence of being aware of the environment and that kind of thing.
Absolutely, and as I say, that's where it gets exciting. You know, whenever you can build a macro, a complicated, not that I'm a programmer, as I say, but the controller that I use and have used for 10 years is HomeVision. It's csi3.com, I believe, is their URL. It's a little box. It's a standalone hardware controller. It does IR and X10 and video. It's a tremendous piece of kit. It has a PC software which allows a non-programmer like me to create these complicated macros. It has I/O as well, digital I/O, meaning you can have switches, inputs, all sorts of things driving a macro, the software deciding the logic. So yeah, that's where the power comes from.
So with the IR, you could actually send a signal to, say, to your AV receiver to switch your receiver on. So you know, you want to put a movie on, it dims the light, switch your receiver on and puts your TV on the right channel. Can you do that kind of thing?
Absolutely. That's quite simple and something that can be handled just within a universal remote control.
Right, yeah. Could you get it so that the remote, so that it can receive the signal from the remote control and then do all this as well?
Yes, something like HomeVision again, which has an infrared receiver and transmitter, could do all that. So you could send a command to HomeVision, which would then fire off a complete macro with IR commands, with X10 commands, opening and closing curtains on its relay contacts, and absolute. You know, we often say that home automation is has two limiting factors, and it's your budget and your imagination. Pretty much anything's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so go back to the Z-Wave one. This is a sort of a more intelligent system because it knows that, just like you said, it's about the status. So that whereas the X10's like a one-way command, this is a two-way thing, so it knows what's happening.
Absolutely. I mean, X10 is a 30-year-old system. It was 1977, I believe. It was invented in Scotland. So it's a very old protocol. Z-Wave is more like a protocol you would develop if you were starting out today. It has a status request. As I say, it's a great system. I can see a lot of potential in it if we only had the modules available.
And I suppose the modules, because they're power-based, they're not something that you could import, really. You've got to be something designed for your region.
Yeah, exactly. There are voltage problems, and there are RF frequency problems generally in importing devices from America as well.
Yeah, so you've got to make sure you get the right ones for your area. And then you mentioned about some of these devices can be controlled from the PC, but are they then independent from the PC? So if your PC is offline for whatever reason, the things will still carry on working?
Yeah, good question. Again, the device which I use, the HomeVision controller, it does connect to a PC, and it does give you added features like caller ID and web server and things like that. But once if the PC does fail, the basic standalone box still continues. 90% of the functionality is still there. As I say, it's a big debate amongst a lot of our guys on the mailing list whether to involve a PC, and some are very vehemently against it, and others like myself, you know, have had good experience. We're in this house 7 or 8 years now, and I have still the same box running. It's running Windows 2000 server, and it's very stable. It sits there all day, every day. It does a limited amount of things. but I must say I have no problems with stability at all.
I suppose it's the same sort of arguments that the custom AV installers have, you know, the dedicated hardware devices opposed to the media center box, but over a period of time they're coming around to the fact that the PC is sort of a core component, and I guess it's the same with home automation.
Absolutely. I mean, I should be saying this on the Media Center show, but I have had less success with Media Center. Certainly, XP Media Center. I've installed Vista Media Center since the beginning of the year, and had found it very good, much more stable than XP. But recently, I've had some driver issues where my TV channels are going missing. It's a Synergy card, and it seems to be a known issue. And a PVR in our home, and probably a lot of other people's homes, is becoming an almost mission critical application. You know, the family are up in arms if their favorite program hasn't been recorded. So. I'm coming from a long time user of TiVo, which I find utterly reliable as well. One device, specialist device, closed device, which was very, very reliable. And because of that, and the problems I'm having with Media Server, I'm seriously considering going to Sky Plus, even though it's closed. And then, you know, I enjoy Media Center, the aspect we have four Mark 1 Xboxes around the home, and we stream content to different bedrooms and different rooms in the home from the Media Center PC. I love WebGuide. I love the way I can VPN home from work and bring up my guide and set a program to record that I forgot about. So there are great advantages in Media Center, but I've just found it a little problematic.
The drivers are an issue. I mean, I noticed when I changed to Vista, I got the Hopage card, and that's been really reliable, touch wood, and I don't really have those driver issues. But yeah, it's a nightmare, isn't it, when you start to get driver issues and like you said, it is a mission critical, and I'm sure just about everybody listening has got the same situation now. I do Media Center development, and I don't touch my main Media Center PC with any development stuff now, because I just can't afford to crash it.
Absolutely, yeah. the angry looks from the family are pretty scary sometimes.
Yeah.
But when you mention the Hopage card, I've read that on the Green Button forums, and it's something that maybe I should do if the drivers are more stable. Because as I say, I love the way the box works. If we could just get that reliability.
I mean, I've had, I would say, probably one or two missed recordings in the last sort of 4 or 5 months, something like that. So. It has been pretty good, and I've never really worked out whether it was the fact that, you know, the scheduling changed or whatever, but yeah, touch wood, it has been a lot better. But going back on the PC side of things, aside from Media Center software, there is a lot of software to control home automation from a Windows 2-foot experience, isn't there?
Yes, there is, and growing. There are a few standout packages, probably HomeSeer being number one, but most of our readers would probably use HomeSeer. Probably not just as easy to program maybe as HomeVision. It's obviously PC based, so you have no backup if the PC fails, but from a cost point of view, anyone with a spare PC lying about can get a very powerful home automation system using HomeSeer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing I noticed when I was using mine is that I could program, say, the appliance device to come on at certain times, and I actually used it for the Christmas lights, because the mains plug for where the lights were, the outside lights, was in the garage, and, you know, saved me going out to the garage every night to put the lights on. I set, you know, to come on at different times a day, and depending on what day of the week, it was all different times, so it was really smart. But that was so simple to do, and even without, you didn't need the PC on once you'd sort of sent the config down. So these devices are fairly smart, is that they can store some configs.
Yeah, and even devices which maybe don't have a photocell or some external way to judge whether it's light or dark, they can calculate that based on your longitude and latitude. If you can find that information, most of the software will take that, and it'll know the dawn and dusk times and help you set a dark flag.
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought of that. I just set mine as sort of during the week, come on at 4 o'clock, you know, and then turn off at 10 o'clock or whatever. But you're saying you can, yeah, I never thought about that. You can actually use your location to work that out to a proper time.
And another use, some of our guys would use local weather stations. If you're close to a weather station, some people tie that data into their heating control. So instead of buying a weather compensator or some very complex heating control, you can have your PC do that. And you know, if there's a forecast that it's going to be a snowy evening, for example, in the winter, your system can start to ramp up the temperature, so your house should be warm by the time it hits, rather than reacting to the house cooling down.
Right. That is where you really get the power of the sort of the PC and the you know, using your broadband connection, all that to make your house really intelligent.
Exactly. I think broadband is one of the biggest drivers for the smart home as well. I can remember, you know, a few years ago having ISDN. We live in the countryside, and we didn't have broadband for a long time, and it was a nightmare. You know, Free Server, I think it was, came out with the first always on connection, and they were soon they pulled the plug on that one whenever people like me did use it as an always on connection. But it's a total prerequisite. Once the home is online, once it's like your water connection or your electricity connection, once it's permanently there and it's expected to be there, then there are so many things that you can go out onto the web to do and add functionality.
And I suppose that's where you can use it, so you can, from a different location, you can get into your machine and see the status of your house and all that kind
exactly,
of thing.
Exactly, yeah. And HomeSeer, again, is a great product for doing that. They have a lovely web front end. Where you can, you know, depending on your sensors, you can tell the temperature of your home, you can tell what lights are on and off, you can control lights, you can look at CCTV. We have a little Panasonic IP CCTV camera which we use when we're away from home, and it's great just to be able to have a look around and check that everything's okay. So the web certainly is bringing a lot more functionality.
I mean, that was the next thing I was going to ask you about, actually, is security. I mean, the smart aspect of, you know, to closing blinds and light dimming and everything else is great, but the security, if you go out and get get someone to come in and install cameras and with internet connections, that's going to be expensive. So is this a good way of making your home secure for a lower cost?
Yes, absolutely. Security is number two pretty much on the list, and the one that probably most people get into second, or AV probably. But there's a very good alarm system in the UK called Comfort, which is pretty much a home automation controller on its own. It's pretty intelligent. It actually talks to our home vision through a piece of software called ACE. There's a PC sitting in the middle doing the translation. But Comfort is almost as powerful, I would say, as home vision. It doesn't have some of the features, but it has the logic that you require. Maybe again, not as easy to program for if you're a non-programmer, but it can do a lot of the things that home vision can. It also has a great telephone control system. So, for example, again in our home, we have electric garage doors, and I've been able to on several occasions. My brother-in-law is a plumber, and he came to look at our boiler one evening, and even though I wasn't in the house, I was able to open the garage doors via the phone and let him into the garage to work on the boiler. So security is another area that lots of people look at. CCTV. A lot of our readers would have a GeoVision system. GeoVision is a PC card which you connect conventional CCTV cameras up to. Very impressive software suite with it, which allows you to remotely access your cameras. It'll record the hard drive. It'll record based on movement or time of day. It'll ignore certain parts of the frame. If you have a tree that blows back and forward, you can cut that out of the frame. So that's a great system. We have a story on Automated Home which shows you how we built the GeoVision server. And now, of course, IP CCTV is pretty much all the rage. Much easier to view from work or externally. Basically, you know, plug it into your router or your switch, or in lots of cases now they're wireless, so just plug them in the wall. Set up a little rule in your firewall, and you can view it from anywhere.
I mean, that's great, isn't it, to be able to see this, you know, to see your camera from sort of over the internet. So what kind of price are you looking at if you wanted to install one of these wireless cameras?
The one we have, I believe, is a BCL30. I think it was around £150. That's wireless or wired, and that's a pan and tilt as well. The front of the camera is like a little like a golf ball almost, and the lens rotates in that little sort of half sphere, so you get pretty good pretty good up, down, left, right movement. Some of them do zoom as well, but they're mostly digital zoom and not worth having. But there's another good one. The model number escapes me. It's a Linksys, I think. A little wireless camera, and it also has audio on it as well. So you can potentially listen to your better half at home as well as watch her at the cooker there. So yeah, great devices, really cheap, really come down in price the last few years. Axis is a big player in IP CCTV. We use those in work, and they are much more expensive, but they are much higher quality as well. But yeah, I think it would be hard to advise someone to go the conventional route these days if you have broadband. I think IP CCTV is definitely the way to go.
But the whole thing is I guess is coming down to where these things are an accessible level for, you know, for the enthusiast. You've got your PC, you've got the intelligence in that, so you can get these sort of wireless cameras and home automation Xtang devices, and you know you're using your PC, aren't you, to control all these things?
Absolutely. I think price is a great point. I just found a review on our site the other day from quite a few years ago when I bought into wireless networking at home. It was a Linksys WAP 11. A lot of your users probably started with those. It was a very basic 802.11 access point and a PCMCIA card, and I think those two devices were around £400 from memory. No, and previously to that, the price point had been 1,000, so this was a big price drop, and where I bought in, now, you know, I don't know, PC World, 50 or 60 quid, probably, for a USB dongle and some sort of an access point. So, obviously, the lower the prices get, then the more popular these things become.
With these devices, and the prices have come down, are they nice and straightforward to then sort of throw these in to install these? And you mentioned that, you know, X10, you can sort of retrofit afterwards, but some of the systems you need to plan out beforehand. So are they accessible, you know, that, you know, anybody could just come and get started with it?
Some of them are, and some of them aren't, I suppose. Depends on what level you go in at. But going back to lighting a bit, I meant to mention CBUS, which again is a very popular system with our readers. It's not quite as high end. It's not millionaires homes by any means, but it's much more expensive than X10 and Z-Wave, but it is a proper professional hardwired lighting system. So there are things like that which pretty much need to be built into a home unless they're doing a major renovation. So they're pretty much there are all stages available for all sorts of people. And the security side of things, again, you might want to install Comfort if you're doing a new build, or you might want to go to some of the something like a Bisonic panel, which gives you wireless receivers and much easier to retrofit.
And things like, you know some of the things that you can't sort of plug an adapter into, so your regular light in your living room, you know, this sort of ceiling mounted, are there ways of controlling those devices?
Yes, there are things called micro modules, which need a neutral wire, so they can only really be fitted in a ceiling rose. If you have an old-fashioned ceiling rose with an earth up there and a neutral, you can wire those into those. There is an X10 wall switch, which will replace the switch on your wall. It's only any good for a single switch. You can't do two-way switching or anything. So there are things like that. CBUS, which you mentioned, the hardwired system, they've brought out CBUS wireless now, which is again something which you can retrofit. It'll pretty much go straight into the wall, take the existing switch off, and put that switch in. There's Reiko, there are Dynalite, there are lots and lots of different products out there. So whatever your budget and whatever your needs, there will be something available.
One other element that that I've seen sort of mentioned with home automation that's becoming sort of more relevant now is the sort of power for saving functions, and the fact that, you know, everybody leaves things on standby, but because you've got access to the on-off switches effectively with home automation, that you can turn, you can use this to turn your TV off properly, but then turn it back on without having to go over and flip the switch on the wall, which is why people don't put it in standby in the first place. So is that something that's coming into the market?
Yes, again, I think this is going to be a big driver. It's obviously pretty pretty important at the moment with the weather and things, and it's people's minds are being focused on it. In my experience, I couldn't hand on heart say that home automation has saved me any money. I have a horrendous electricity bill, but that comes from running lots of PCs night and day. But yeah, I think for the average homeowner, that will be definitely a driver, something that monitors your electricity usage, something which allows you to turn your TV off. I heard your podcast with Tim a few weeks ago when he talked about Bye-Bye Standby. We just published just this afternoon a review of Bye-Bye Standby, and those sort of things definitely are going to be a driver for the home automation market.
And so the basic idea of those, in case anybody's not heard the show, is the Bye-Bye Standby thing. It allows you to use home automation to actually turn things off at the plug and then turn them back on again when it's convenient for you, and you don't have to get up and flip these things on.
Exactly. It's similar to X10. It doesn't use X10 technology. I believe the reason was that there's a little bit of current leakage when an X10 module is switched off, and that sort of negated the whole power saving idea, so they went with a slightly different technology, and it's RF based as well. So similar functionality. You can hit a button on your little key fob remote and turn everything off when you go to bed at night. Know that your TV's off, your hi-fi's off, your PC's off, whatever.
And that seems a good way of working. And like, I'm a bit like you. I've got devices on all over the house, but yeah, everybody should think about it at least. And but the one thing that puts you off is having to go around and flick off 20 plugs before you go to bed. But if you can have this kind of through a macro kind of thing where you can say, right, turn all these devices on, that one can stay on, and then in the morning, these come back on and that one needs to go off, and that kind of thing, I guess you could set up quite a good system of reducing your power consumption without going over the top and being sort of really anal about going switching everything off.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a convenience thing that people aren't really going to go around, as you say, unplugging things, every night. So you have to make it convenient for them. Ultimately, I think that the responsibility lies with the equipment manufacturers. We should be able to build a TV today that uses a tiny amount of electricity on standby rather than 50% or whatever some of the worst offenders do. But until then, we've got to make it easy for people. And devices like this will certainly do that.
Now, I just want to briefly mention that, we talked about home automation and media center on the shows before, but I just wanted to mention, other ways of controlling home automation from media center?
Yeah, there certainly are. There are several products out there. HomeSeer is one that we've mentioned. They have a great media center plugin. Embedded automation, again, I've heard you talk about lots on the show, the M-Control. UK's own, as we mentioned there, Harmony. They have an MC plugin. Tim Allard talked about it at length on the show the other week. So yes, there are definitely more. I noticed quite a few installers starting to use MCE or Vista Media Center, certainly on their stands at the Smart Home Show this year at the NEC. Some installers still a bit wary of it. I talked to a couple who still were steering clear of it, but it's starting to creep in there gradually, and I think it's because it's pretty accessible. What else do we have in the living room that gives us access to all our media and potentially allows us to view your CCTV and turn off our lights? We've got a remote in our hand, we've got used to these menus. It seems a pretty obvious way to move the interface ahead.
And especially as someone like me who uses Media Center and on the Xbox 360 in extender mode, you know, using M Control, I can control my switches, which I mentioned earlier, through there, so I don't have to go over to the PC or anything else. It's all there within sort of one interface and on one device.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the whole data phone networks is another major topic in home automation. Cat5 is pretty important in a smart home. If you're lucky enough to build it from scratch, then I think we've 2.5 kilometers of Cat5 in our house, and that's by no means a lot. Some of our readers have 5, 6, 7, 8 kilometers of Cat5. So, you know, if you have the opportunity, put lots of cable in. There's so many uses for cable as well. You know, apart from data and phone networks, you can have curtain control, electric guides, doors, as I mentioned before, temperature probes. There's a million and one uses for Cat5 cable.
Like, yeah, there absolutely is, and it's when you've not got it, you really miss it. You know, I've got a house where I've not been able to sort of fit with Cat5, and so I've got a bit of Cat5 sort of in one room, and the Xbox and everything else is all kept to that, and then another Xbox is on wireless. But it really does make a big difference if you can use the Cat5, but I just guess not everybody's got the luxury of fitting that.
That's true. It's pretty much something that you have to put in from scratch, or unless you're doing a major renovation. But if you can, I would say pretty much it's very inexpensive. You know, buying a few boxes of Cat5 on the grand scale of building a house is absolutely insignificant. So throw in as much as you can. Another area which you probably didn't talk about was AV, whole house audio, home cinema, that side of things. Mm. That's another very popular entry into home automation for a lot of our readers. Whenever we were cabling the house, we ran speaker cable to the ceiling of most rooms, and we ended up, we didn't use it. We have a Sonos wireless system. So there are some things possibly that you cable for that you don't end up using, but you know, it's easy to do, and you may as well do it when you have the opportunity.
Yeah, it's so much easier to do it, isn't it, while you're at the building stage than it is trying to fit it afterwards.
Yep, absolutely.
I'm surprised in some respects that a lot more houses don't come with it, but then on the other hand, I'm not really, because I know that they try and keep the cost down as much as possible. But
yeah,
you know, a new house, you think nowadays having an Ethernet port next to your main socket would make great sense to do, but I guess that, you know, the builders that are just doing it for, you know, building a job lot, 20 houses, moving on, they're not going to look to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Certain builders are a bit more switched on, and starting to realize that people need these things, but still the amount of houses that are built with one aerial socket, you know, and a one phone socket in the hall and things like that are really crazy. It annoys me. But another great use for Cat5 at the minute is AV distribution. A good friend, Keith, that I mentioned, who helped me wire the home, has a product. If you go to Cat5, Cat with a K, Cat5.tv, he produces a series of modules which allow you to send high-quality audio and video over Cat5. And, of course, there are other systems available for sending HDMI signals. Like, you need 2 Cat5s for an HDMI, but you know, Cat5, I hate to go on about Cat5, but it is the answer to so many problems in the home.
Mm. So if you've got the opportunity to put it in, like you said, it's not just there for data, you can use it for other things as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. CES, actually, a couple of years back, one of the sort of the audio systems, that they're routing audio down Cat5 as well.
Yep, absolutely. And Keith's modules do that as well. You can route, I believe, digital audio over them as well. So, yeah, the whole structured cabling and the star network, where you, you know, one area of your home where everything's cabled back to, and the ability to patch things, something that's a phone socket beside your bed today, you might want to be a data point tomorrow. And when you have this structured cabling, all those sorts of things are very easy. It's something that's been done in businesses, and probably where you work, I'm sure it's the same. And that's just bringing those ideas into the home.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a topic for a show in its own right, isn't it? The structured cabling.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Where would you recommend that if someone likes the idea of home alteration and wants to get sort of a low cost entry, you know, low entry cost into the market? What should they do? Where should they go?
Well, automatedhome.com, of course. What I would say.
Well, yeah, it's good. You're right, too, though, because I'm going to say that it is a really good site for finding out, you know, what's going on and finding about the appliances. And like, so you've got a great community
on
there.
We have,
as
I must
well.
Say, our mailing list is busy, and as I say, our forums, if you prefer that too, but our mailing list probably are busier than our forums. But yeah, there's lots of helpful advice there. I would really like to recommend people send people to the Z-Wave products. As I say, it may be next year. X10. Is still in there, don't get me wrong, it's unbeatable for price and for modules and things, but it is getting starting to look its age. But I believe that 2008 I hope 2008 will be the year for Z-Wave in the UK, and that will be a great starting point for people.
On the sort of price, you know, I mentioned that I got these the appliance switch and the dimmer. What's the average price of an appliance switch on X10?
X10 is very inexpensive, under £20. I think £17-18, something like that, for an appliance module and a dimmer module. So, as I say, unbeatable as far as budget entry into the thing goes. I mean, if you want, you know, plenty of the e-tailers have starter packs where you get a selection of modules, and go and spend £100 or whatever, get yourself a few modules, have a play with it, and see if it's for you. At the very worst, you put them on eBay and get a few quid for them. It may be the start of a beautiful relationship with automation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the more creative people get with these things, like you mentioned about, you know, knowing your address details, means it knows your longitude and latitude, which means it knows when the light's, you know, when it's going to be daylight or not, and the weather from a website means it knows your external temperature, and all these kind of things. Just seems really excited to be able to bring it all together and combine that with, you know, media center integration and everything else. That you see, it does bring that vision of sort of the intelligent home together, which I think is something that, you know, all enthusiasts have, that they want to have that.
Absolutely, and again, you raise a good point, Ian, that one of the biggest challenges for home automation is this bringing everything together. That's probably the biggest single stumbling block in the whole thing. We all have different devices and whenever you're putting a home cinema together nowadays, especially, HDMI is a standard, and you can plug your DVD player into your AV amp and into your projector or your TV or whatever. That standard, that protocol, doesn't exist in home automation, and that's a big challenge to get the CCTV to talk to your computer, and then your computer to talk to your touchscreen in the wall, and your touchscreen in the wall to talk to your whatever. Those are the issues, and that's something I'm always harping on about. If we could develop off our mailing list, some of the guys did develop their own protocols. Zap, that's XAP and XPL were two protocols which were started by the UK home automation community, and they are find themselves into some hardware devices now, and they are an attempt to try and create a common glue to allow devices to talk to each other using little schemas, a bit like drivers, I suppose, in Windows, where a little bit of code would work out what this device was talking and translated into a common language which all the other devices could talk to. So it's something that's been slow, and something I think we really need to go the next step to make it easy for the public. We need to have some sort of a standard protocol that everything can talk.
And what other thing I would mention as well on your site is you've got a great selection of videos.
Thanks. Yes, we started to make a few videos. We had a couple professionally made at our Hatfield meetings 2003-2004. So we have those up on YouTube now, and I took quite a few videos from the Smart Home Show this year, so there are some little snippets from about I think there's 9 videos in total from different stands around the show, showing, you know, CBUS and remote controls and various different devices. So that's good. I think, you know, from my point of view, whenever I visit a site to read on something which I don't really know that much about, there's nothing better than there used to be a picture, now there's nothing better than a video. You know, a 1 minute or a 2 minute video can put over an awful lot.
Absolutely. I've done a few, and they are really informative when you get to watch them.
Absolutely.
Just time consuming to
Yeah, I've watched yours, Ian. Very enjoyable. Your CES videos were great. And thank you, of course, for our music track on the Smart Home Show this year. You know, I enjoy your music. I'm a bit of an electronic music guru, and I really enjoy your music, and thanks for donating that track to our video.
Oh yeah, that was good. I forgot about that. Yeah, that it was good to be able to donate that. I mean, and one other thing finally I want to mention is that you've had an experience this year that I was really envious of, and that was your trip to Monaco.
Ah yes, indeed. Lifetime ambition fulfilled. I'd been to Silverstone a couple of times in the 90s, and it's a big birthday year for me this year, so my wife surprised me at Christmas with tickets to Monaco. So fantastic weekend, highly recommended. You need to go away.
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, like you, I've been to Silverstone and I've been to Le Mans, but Monaco is one of those things, because I think because you're so close to the track, aren't you, that it's a real experience.
Absolutely. There's something very strange and surreal about walking a track which you've watched for the last 20 years and even driven around countless laps on your PlayStation or your Xbox or whatever, you know, to get there and say, oh look, that's that, and oh look, you can't see that on the TV. It's almost a semi-religious experience getting there, but fantastic. Yeah, and I don't think you know, certainly we were so close to the track, it was phenomenal, and they supplied us with little ear protectors, should I say, whenever we got our tickets, and I thought that's a bit naff, we'll not need those, but we did. It literally hurt, you know, much closer than Silverstone, and you couldn't take the sound without the ear protectors.
You got some great pictures as well, which you saw.
Thanks. Yeah, I was able to borrow, actually ended up borrowing a camera and a lens. A couple of good friends lent me some nice equipment, so yeah, well pleased with the photos I got.
Yeah, and then you can get those fired through your media centre, and it'll look really well.
Absolutely.
And of course, it was a great result as well, just to mention that as well.
You're a McLaren fan. You see, I was there for the red hats, you see, so it wasn't a great result for us, but no, I really enjoyed it, and with Lewis coming second, I couldn't complain about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been great talking to you tonight, and I hope that's whet some people's appetite into home automation. They can find out more, and mentioned you know, Embedded Automation M Control, who sponsor the digitallifestyle.com website, so shout out to them. But you know, it's a huge area that you can take it right the way from, you know, the high level, like you said, integrated into all these different things, right the way down just to a simple sort of on off switch. And really, to me, it's all about being enthusiastic in Media Centre, is tying all these things
Absolutely.
Together.
Absolutely. I'll try and give you some URLs for your show notes to try and help people with find the sites that we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll, of course, I'll include a link to your site. And like I said, it is a good site to go and encourage people to have a look at that.
Thanks, appreciate that, Ian. Thanks thanks for your site too, and all the podcasts you put out in a month. Don't know how you do it. I know how much time it takes to run a site, so you're running a site and producing the great content you do, so it's very much appreciated.
Oh, that's great. And like I said, when everybody says that, it's always good to know that someone's listening or someone's watching, or at least looking at the site, because like you said, it's a labour of love, but I do love doing it, and I'm sure you're the same. You know, you've got your community, and it's great being part of the community.
Absolutely, that's what we do it for.
Yeah. Well, many thanks for your time today, and good luck with the continuation of your site.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay, that's it for this week's show. Don't forget to check out the video of the Blu-ray PC, Sony's device. The email address for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I do like getting your emails and I like reading them out, so please keep those coming in. Don't forget to check out the forums, and I'll hopefully have another video out fairly soon, and I'll see you next week with another show. Thanks for listening. Bye.